Our guest is a longtime friend who has enhanced our radio program many, many times over the years. Of course, he is the quadruple threat, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, play-by-play man extraordinaire. You could follow along what he's up to on Twitter, at Roxy Bernstein. Roxy, always great having you. How's life treating you and the family these days?
It's certainly been an eventful, emotional week, to say the least there, Steve.
Yeah, you know, when I heard the news Monday about the passing of Bill Walton, you're the first one I thought of because, you know, you get sad, but when you think of him, you can't help but smile. And I remember when you and I first met, you were in town, and you had listened to the show, and you had heard I was doing my show across the street from Matthew Knight Arena at the Wild Duck, and you came in, and I remember joking with you, and I said, you're not here to say hello. I was like, you're doing the game with Walton. You need a couple pops. it's just so – I'm curious – when did you meet him the first time? Was it, you know, as – colleagues? Was it an event? Was it preparing to do a game?
I mean, he would never remember it. When I was a kid, I got introduced to him once when he was playing in the NBA, when they were in town playing the Warriors. But, you know, that I wouldn't really count that. And then casually we had a couple limited conversations when I was doing the radio for Cal, and he'd come in and do games. This is before we worked together at ESPN. And then a few years into my tenure at the Worldwide Leader, somebody thought it was a good idea to put me with Bill for a game. And little did we know that that was going to lead to countless games together, a life-lasting friendship for me. And the impact that he's had on my life has been tremendous, as significant an impact as anybody's had on me. And like, I remember our first game like it was yesterday, and it's so crystal clear, and that's how much I cherished working with Bill. Every time I was around him, I was a better person. I was in a better mood because you couldn't help but be that way when you're in the presence of Bill.
You know, before we go on, I want to offer my condolences. I mean, you lost a close friend, and you know. I would, you know, upon hearing the news, I would imagine just the gamut of emotions, to say the least.
Yeah, it really, and considering the demise or the end of the Pac-12 as we know it,
right,
over the weekend, which, you know, coincided with the last event for the Pac-12 was the baseball tournament down in Scottsdale. I knew Bill had been ill, and I had known that more than likely the end was sooner rather than later. I was sworn to secrecy. That was the way Bill wanted to fight this battle. He did not want anyone to know. He did not want anyone to feel sorry for himself, for him. And he didn't want to bring anybody down. He wanted to be positive in every aspect of his life. And that's why I thought he decided to fight this courageous battle and not really tell people what was going on. And so I was somewhat prepared for it, Steve, but you never really are ready for it. I got the call Monday morning. I was on the East Coast. I was actually getting ready to do a ball game that thankfully got rained out, because I don't know how I would have made it through 3 hours of calling the Dodgers and the Mets on Monday after getting the news. I was literally at Citi Field when I got the call. And it was still as a punch in the gut, devastating, even though I was somewhat braced for it. And there's no way to prepare for it. And it was extremely emotional day. As I joked with my boss at ESPN Radio, because he called to check on me to see how I was doing. He knew, you know, obviously when the NBA put the announcement out of what had happened, he wanted to make sure I was okay. And I said to my boss, Peter, I'm like, Pete, It's a good thing it's raining outside right now, because it definitely would have been raining in the booth had I had to go on the air for 3 hours.
Yikes. Talking with Roxy Bernstein, you know, the thing that has struck me that has been across the board what everyone who's really known him has gotten to say. And if there was really someone who could have had an ego as arguably the greatest college basketball player ever, one of the greatest centers ever, successful broadcaster, all he was known for, so you could attest to this, that he really did make it about everybody he was with and not about him, right?
He made you feel, Steve, like you were the most important person in the world. You were the center of his universe when you were around him. It didn't matter if it was me. It didn't matter if it was somebody he just met. It doesn't matter if it was one of his lifelong friends, that we were all the most important person to him. He was such a curious person who had this insatiable thirst for knowledge. And he wanted to know what people, what made them tick. And he'd been through so much in his life, and there is no person I have met that has, the way they view life is more positive and optimistic as Bill. And it really is remarkable. And there's nothing fake, nothing contrived about it. That's who he is. That was his view on life. And that's the way he lived his life. And he is such a giving person. And the other thing, Steve, is he hated to talk about himself. Like, in terms of his basketball, right, we all know how good he was as a player. The younger generation may not. They see this caricature on TV. But you could make the case that Bill's the second greatest college basketball player ever, maybe the best team player we've ever seen collegiately, because Kareem was so good in college. But Bill did everything across the board. But all Bill cared about was the team and winning. He didn't care about himself. And a lot of times when I wanted him to talk about himself, you had to pry it out of him. He didn't want it. Anytime, oh, well, you won two national championships. No, we won two national championships. I had a great team. I had John Wooden. I had Jamal Wilkes. I had Greg Lee. We had great players. I was a part of those teams. But then, whenever I bring up when they lost in 74, his senior year, he's the first one to take the blame and say, I'm a disappointment to humanity. It was my fault. And everybody knows Bill was Bill, right, and it wasn't Bill Walton's fault they lost.
You know, I saw that you commented on the picture I posted, because at the ESPN 25th anniversary party in 2004, first of all, this was before he had undergone a lot of these successful surgeries that allowed him to get out and do things and bike and hike. And I saw him being helped down the stairs, and he just sat in a booth, Roxy, and just you waited your turn to go talk to him. And one of the first things I said, I introduced myself at the time I was working for ESPN Radio, and I said to him, I still am not speaking to Dwight Clay, who was the Notre Dame guy who hit the baseline jumper. And so he felt, like you said, he found out I was from Eugene and into sports, and all he wanted to do was ask about me. But one of the things, for people who have gotten on his case over the years, I've tried to explain to them, I'm curious as to your reaction, that what he put himself through those 4 or 5 years, 70 surgeries, some experimental, all he wanted to do was get back on the court and play the game he loved.
He was in dire straits, and he lost so much of his career to those injuries. And it's a shame, because we were cheated of seeing one of the greatest players ever. He's still one of the top 75 whenever that team came out. He is a Hall of Famer. He's a two-time MVP. He led Portland to their only championship. And, of course, winning another one when he was the sixth man of the year with the Celtics. But it really, you wonder just how lengthy and how good his career could have been had it not been for all those injuries. It's sad, and it took him into a really dark, bad place, Steve. And it's been well documented. He wrote about it in his book that he was in such deep depression that he nearly committed suicide from it. He was in that much pain on a daily basis. And maybe that's why he came out with a positive outlook that he did when he started to feel better again, that he was grateful for getting another opportunity in life and wanted to live it to its fullest. And I guarantee you, there's no person on this planet that got more out of life than Bill Walton did.
No, when I was talking the other day, when you say larger than life, and then, you know, you're my size, your size, and he's 6'11", he literally was larger than life. But so, something that came up also in listening to a lot of you speak about him, in preparing to do a broadcast, I love one thing, and you could verify, if something interesting came up, I guess, in pre-production, he'd be like, no, save that for on air, because I guess he wanted to have a really initial and authentic reaction to that story or that fact.
Save it for air. That was, I would even make up, just walking in the gym for shoot around in the morning, Steve, and something as innocuous as saying hello and asking how his wife Lori's doing. And he'd look at me with this quizzical look like, why are you talking to me? And then he would say, Roxy, nice to see you. Save it for air. And then we would sit at opposite ends of the building. We wouldn't talk. That's what he wanted. He wanted it completely natural. Nothing was planned. And our first conversation of the day was, hi, welcome to Matthew Knight Arena. Tonight here we got the Ducks taking on the UCLA Bruins. Bill, we got it. What do you think? Roxy, we got a game. The game on the Millennium tonight. Here we are. Matthew Knight Arena, the home of the Oregon Ducks. Pat Kilkenny is here. Rob Mullins is here. This is the greatest place in the universe. That's what he wanted. And I respected it so much. And I remember that from the first game we did together that he told me that. And I wanted to talk to him. You could tell I was so excited to work with him. And he was so excited to do the game we did. It was at the University of San Francisco, believe it or not, was the first place we ever worked a game together. It was NIT. And I don't know, it was about 12 years ago, Steve. And it was LSU against USF. And he was so excited because that's where Bill Russell got his start. And he idolized Bill Russell. And we didn't talk at all. And, you know, the only thing he said, he looked at me during the first shoot around, he goes, are you Roxy? He knew, but yeah. And then, okay. And I, you know, Bill, I'm so excited, looking forward to tonight. Roxy, save it for air. And then we get about, I don't know, 45 seconds, 30 seconds before we go on air. And he looks over at me and he says, it is Roxy, right? And I go, yes, Bill. And he goes, I will try my best not to get you fired, Roxy. And then he proceeds, but this really put me at ease. And I remember this because he said, you can ask me anything. It doesn't matter what you ask. I'm not going to get mad. You have freedom to do whatever you want. I am an open book. Ask away.
Incredible.
And I did. I threw questions at him. And you know what's crazy, and it sat with me here, I thought about it all this week, is there was one thing I wanted to know from him that it's not really well chronicled or written. I've seen it alluded to over the years. But why wasn't he on the 1972 Olympic team?
Huh.
Because that was a team that lost. He was the National Player of the Year, just finished his sophomore year, and UCLA won the title. And it really hadn't been written. And so I wanted to know. And I kept waiting for the right moment to ask him. And this is how crazy life works. The last game that we did together was in late January. It was UCLA and USC at the Galen Center. And during that broadcast, something came up that triggered it in me, and I asked him the question on the air. And I don't know if it's cosmic, but how crazy is that? I was holding on to this question with him for about 7 or 8 years, Steve. And then finally, the last game we did together, I got it out there. And I got the answer.
And?
Oh, you want the answer? Oh.
Well, I remember that game. I remember that game. I mean, their big guy was the guy who would dethrone him, Tommy Burleson of NC State.
So I asked him the question, and he said, as I prefaced it, look, you were the National Player of the Year. You won the national title. Why weren't you on the team? You know, my mind is racing because it could have been too political and people didn't want that. Could they be holding against John Wooden? And Bill said that they wanted him to try out. And they wanted him to go to Colorado Springs shortly after the season. And they wanted him to try out for the team. And Bill told USA Basketball, I'm not going to try out. If you want me on the team, tell me when you start practice, I'll be there. I am not going to try out. Because he wanted some time off to rest and do whatever Bill did and enjoy himself. So he wanted some time off. And that USA Basketball said, nope, you got to try out. And Bill says that I'm not playing. And that's what happened. And that's why he wasn't on the team. And sure enough, what's the first team that lost in the Olympics? That team without Bill Walsh.
Wow. That's an unbelievable story. I never heard that. I never even thought about that. Well, I guess since you're here in the region, I do have to ask you about what you'll be doing. I know you're up at Corvallis, you know, Oregon State. This is a team who's been a powerhouse. I think they only have two home losses. So, you know, thoughts on this regional you're about to call?
It's an interesting one because UC Irvine's one of those. We have a couple of those teams, really, with Nichols as well, being one of those mid-major teams that can be a little pain in the rear end, that they're good. UC Irvine's really good. They really pitch it well. They have a young staff. So that's going to be a challenge for them. First game is against Tulane, and oddly enough, a former Oregon assistant, Jay Ullman,
yep,
is the coach of Tulane. So he's got a lot of experience in the area. I'm sure there's going to be some Oregon State fans that ride him pretty hard because of his days with the Ducks. But I'm anxious to see this regional get going. I think it's a very winnable regional for Oregon State. I think they have a favorable draw. Certainly they have one of the, if not the best player in the year in Travis Bezzana. I think they're motivated because in the last day of the regular season, they lost the Pac-12 title. And then the way the tiebreakers went at the Pac-12 tournament, didn't get to play for the championship there. So I think this is a motivated team, and I'm anxious to see them. And I'm also anxious to watch the Ducks down in Santa Barbara, which I think is an intriguing regional as well.
Yeah, playing San Diego, who's a legit mid-major, the way they ran roughshod over the West Coast Conference. Folks, he's Roxy Bernstein. Roxy, I know how busy you are, and I know what a week it's been for you. It means so much to us that you were able to find some time and share your love and thoughts about Big Red. Again, condolences on the loss of your friend and just one of the all-time unique personalities and just wonderful people who's ever crossed our path. Thanks a lot, Roxy. Travel safe, be well, and I always look forward to talking again down the road.
Steve, he was the best. Truly in a class of one, and I'm always thrilled to talk about him. And look, if I was sad or depressed, he'd be mad at me. I've got this voice still in the back of my head, and it's going to be there for the rest of my life. And he forever changed my life. Bill was the best.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot, Rocky. You and your family
do
well. Take care.
You got it, Steve. Take care.
All right, bye.